part of scaling is having the foresight and the ability to envision the next level, whatever that might be for you as an investor.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Michael Wagner was born and raised just outside Rochester, New York, and lives with his wife of 8 years and two small children. Mike bought his first house in February of 2007 and parlayed those profits into new ventures. He has systematically purchased 12 additional houses and one commercial apartment building and two self-storage facilities. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sam. I appreciate being here.
Hey, the pleasure's all mine. The same questions I ask everybody who comes on the show. Can you briefly tell us, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, absolutely. I started way back in the day as a physical therapist by day and a landlord by night. And that worked well enough for a couple years. But let's call it three and a half years in, I realized that the apartments and the tenants and toilets weren't getting me where I wanted to go fast enough. And so I decided something had to change. Long story short, I pivoted to self-storage. I've been now doing that since, 2011. It'll be 10 years this year. And I have to apologize. My bio is a little outdated. We've done many more than two self-storage facilities at this point, but that's where we spend all our time and energy now, is in this world of self-storage.
And you're not updating your bio because you're out taking out more self-storage units. So it's all good. That's fantastic. So you guys, you figured out that you didn't like apartments and said, okay, I'm heading to self-storage. Is that where your focus really solely is now?
It is 100%. That's all I invest in is self-storage facilities. Most of my energy goes toward helping other people learn how to do the same thing. Now, I've of course got my own portfolio, but as some of your listeners might have experienced, you get to a certain point where enough is enough. And then it becomes what else is out there. And so the what else for me more recently has been helping other people learn how to invest in storage. And that's kind of one of the processes by which I've been scaling my investing. Rather than doing all the work myself, I've been bringing other people up and helping them learn how to do the same.
Let's talk a little bit, or if you don't mind, talk to us a little bit about what you mean when you say enough is enough.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big proponent of this idea that, don't get me wrong, I love scaling. That's why I'm here on your podcast. My definition is just maybe a little different than some folks, and that is that I know, at least for me personally, more is not always better. I've played the more game, and it never got me exactly where I thought I wanted to go. What I've learned is that though more isn't always better, better is always better. And so when I look to scale things, rather than focusing solely on quantity or size, I look at what's the goal here? The goal for us at the Storage Rebellion, what we talk about is we use ordinary garages, these self-storage garages, to create an extraordinary life. So what I want to do when I'm talking about scaling something is not necessarily the size of my portfolio, although that's clearly does grow as time goes by. The most important thing is that we're growing the amount of awesomeness in our life. And so how do you do that? And sometimes it is to grow bigger. Oftentimes it's to simplify, or to maximize profitability or efficiency. Tax efficiency is a big part of my scaling process, because my thought is I can make more money with the same size portfolio if I can figure out a way not to let Uncle Sam get a whole bunch of it from me, right? Right. So that's kind of how my brain works.
Man, there's a lot to unpack there. Let's dig in maybe on what your definition of an extraordinary life is, or I think as you also put it, increasing awesomeness. What does that mean?
Yeah, that's the technical term for it, right?
Right, of course.
Well, of course, it goes without saying that that's going to be different for everybody. But for my overarching kind of thesis is that we as humans are at our happiest when we're free to spend our time and our money in a way that's in direct reflection of our core values. Mm-hmm. And so for me, one of those core values is stewardship. Hence the coaching program. I like to share all of the things that I've been blessed to learn in this arena. But of course, I love freedom as well. My family, as you can possibly see if you're watching in the background here, is very important to me. And so our extraordinary life is one where we get to wake up every day and everything that we do in that day is a get to rather than a have to.
That's impressive. That's impressive. Do you feel like you had a period of going through a had to phase in order to get to the get to phase?
Absolutely. You know, it's the school of hard knocks and paying your dues and any other cliche that we want to throw out there. I think that's part of it. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I never do anything that I'd rather not do. Even today, with all the success we've been fortunate enough to experience, sometimes you just got to eat your you-know-what sandwich. And that's part of it. It's not about, for me, the important thing is that you always have your eye on transitioning toward a life where the work you do doesn't feel like work.
How does someone, or how did you go about determining what your core values are? And then how did you say, okay, those are my core values. Here's how I want to honor those in my life. What did that look like for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I was very fortunate to be exposed to several high-level mentors who walked me through the process, several organizations, mastermind groups that I've participated in that were helped me become very intentional about what my core values were, what my ideal life might look like, and helped me kind of strip away the limiting beliefs that hold a lot of us back. And so, you know, one of the big, my big things is that if you don't define success for yourself, you'll end up chasing somebody else's version of it. And that's the moment of disillusion when you achieve it and go, well, wait a minute, this doesn't feel like I thought it would. Right. And that can happen when we climb in the corporate ladder. That can happen in real estate when we think all we want is 100 tenants paying us rent. Well, that's the vehicle. If you don't use that vehicle to take yourself and your life to the right place, the vehicle isn't all that. All what you thought it might be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I love that idea of, you know, if you don't determine what success looks like for you, you'll end up chasing someone else's. I forget who it was, but somebody I was listening to recently said, hey, you know, they had this big dream, this big plan, and then they found themselves that they had accomplished it. And they looked at it and they stood there and just cried because they're like, oh, I did it. And this sucks. This is not what I wanted. Like, and here I am, worked so hard and I got to the top and I found out there's nothing there.
Right.
It's like, oh man, that's a heartbreak. That's a heartbreak story.
It is a heartbreak story. And it's also a gift. If folks can look at that as an opportunity to reassess their motivations and go, okay, here's what I thought. Here's where I ended up. Here's what I've learned. Now, how do we apply that moving forward? So that we can make sure we're headed in the right direction, right? And it always comes back to the fact that if you're focused on the finish line rather than the race, there's always going to be a level of disappointment at the end of it.
Right. Right. Yeah. And maybe, you know, I heard it said somewhere that's what's elevated the human race above all other animals, and the fact that we aren't ever completely satisfied. You know, I mean, a dog is satisfied with a little love and food, and that's really the end of it. Like, they're not out trying to build a new doghouse. It's just like, hey, this is great. But humans always have this, you know, slight level of discontent, which has allowed us to then, you know, grow and build and do things, you know, beyond other animals on Earth. But with that comes also the double-edged sword. So it cuts both ways.
Absolutely.
What is scaling look like to you? I know you've talked, you know, you said, hey, in the beginning that you guys have gone way bigger and obviously haven't updated your bio, which is great because you're busy as heck. But like, what talking in the sense of honoring your core values in growing your business, what does scaling look like for you? And talk to us why you continue to want to scale.
Yeah. So from a nuts and bolts standpoint, you know, our first storage facility we bought 10 years ago was a 10,000 square foot facility.
Like number of units, maybe. Can you break that down?
Yeah, about 100 units, give or take. And it had some vacant land there and it was underperforming. We're a value add. I'm a value add guy when it comes to self-storage. I think that's the biggest bang for our buck. I like to, and that's one way we scale, is we don't just invest for cash flow or just invest for equity. We invest for both. But that first facility was 100 units, 10,000 square feet. Over several years of ownership before we sold it, we expanded to 30,000 square feet of storage. And then optimize that. And from there, once we felt like we had taken that property and ridden the wave to near the crest, we decided to sell, extract those funds, and then move them into another project. And so my scaling is usually not increasing the size of my portfolio, but moving funds from properties that we've stabilized and then moving them into properties with a remaining value add component. So really we focus on the velocity of money more so than portfolio size, if that makes sense.
Sure, sure. And can you break down kind of the mechanics of why you focus on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll just use that example. That first storage facility, 10,000 square feet, I bought for $330,000 back in 2011. It was the first one I bought. And over time, we, of course, invested more money into it to expand it. We were in for about $800,000. And then about 3 years ago, 2018, I was running the numbers and the property was worth about $1.8 million. Wow. And so I looked at that and I said, all right, there's $1 million in equity here. But I'm making 100 grand a year, working 1 or 2 hours worth of work a week. I would be an idiot to sell this thing until I started to calculate my return on equity. At $1 million in equity, I was making 90 grand. That's only a 9% return on equity. And I'm working 1 to 2 hours to get that return. So it made sense to take that money, move it to another property that had a, that was distressed in some way and that had an opportunity to add value that I could then really accelerate the growth that I was able to create with the funds invested.
Right, right. So you're going to take that $1 million, you're going to then reemploy it somewhere else where the return on that $1 million might be another $1 million versus 100 grand a year for 10 years.
Exactly. And if you want the spoiler alert, what we did with of that $1 million, half of it got redeployed into another storage asset down in Florida. That was in April of 18. We just sold that in June of this year. So about 3 years, we turned that $500,000 into $1.5 million.
Right, right, right. So it's so you made again, you accelerated your growth by 3 1/3 times as if you had held it for cash flow, not discounting the present value of those future cash flows. You know, the magic right. Makes sense. It just makes sense. That's really cool. What are some other things that the word scaling means to you, and how have you employed that in your business?
Yeah. So, scaling, another kind of side of this, and maybe this is a little out there for some folks, but I think the concept is valid. And that is that, I want to scale my impact. And so, working less without a degradation of the results that we achieve, whether that's relative to a specific storage facility. So that's outsourcing. When I started this, I answered the phone. Actually, when I started this, I drove to the facility 5 days a week. And as time went by, of course, we developed systems that allowed me to step out of the process and either put vendors, technology, or it would still be a vendor. I did have an employee once. I've decided that that's an inefficient way for me personally to scale. And so I prefer to use vendors and whatnot, but essentially outsourcing the quote unquote labor involved to others so that I'm freed up to only spend my time in what folks would call the zone of genius, right? Or my personal highest and best use. I think for anybody looking to scale, that is a critically important concept to dive deep into. It is, where is my return on time greatest? Where can I do the least amount of work and have the greatest impact?
Yeah. And that's a tough one. That's a tough one as you're growing, is knowing what to turn loose of and what to keep doing. Cause yeah. And that's, we can have a whole podcast just on that. Is that concept as a whole. What is something that you have done in your business maybe that has made you uncomfortable, where you had to step out of your comfort zone in order to grow?
Oh, that's an excellent question. And I can look back, it was 24 months ago. I bought a very large facility. It was actually just an abandoned warehouse and it was in rough shape down in South Carolina. And in order to honor much of what I've already shared so far today, it was the first time where I hired a full out GC. Mm. I would Historically, I wanted to be the guy who would grab the bull by the horns and wrestle it till it was dead.
Right.
And I had to put that into the hands of somebody else and pay a little extra for it. But I was buying my time and sanity back. And so ultimately, that had a lot of learnings embedded in it. But on the whole, it was a great decision. The project has gone really well. It's not quite across the finish line, but we're just about to open up a phase two expansion. So we'll be scaling that location from 30,000 square feet to 50,000 over the next 4 to 6 months.
And what about that process took you outside of your comfort zone?
Yeah, that was, I'm going to say it. I'm a control freak, right? And I hope this doesn't come across as arrogant, but I want people to pass the ball to me and I want to take the shot. And so this was me recognizing at the time through the very fortunate advice of some friends and mentors that, you know, hey, what got you here won't get you there. And if you're looking to scale, and in this case, it was do less, but make more at the same time. You've got to be able to delegate these tasks that aren't your highest and best use. And though I could have been the GC, it didn't make sense to do. I live in New York and the property's in South Carolina. My family would have forgotten what I looked like had I taken on that role. And so for me, it was just the relinquishing of control that really was hardest.
Right. Man, that's, and that's, again, welcome to being a solopreneur, or an entrepreneur. You know, the smaller you are, the harder it is to give up that control. Very, very difficult. I've decided the same thing you have is that I come from a single family background. Of course, you know, flip, you know, 60 some odd houses. And, the last one I did, I'm like, I never want to do this again. Like the next project, and I don't do single family anymore, but even if it's my own house that I buy and remodel, I'm going to hire someone else to do that.
Yeah.
Cause it's not highest and best use. Talk to us about buying stuff out of state. I mean, I know there's a left turn from our current conversation, but it's really interesting that you live in Western New York and you're buying stuff in the Carolinas. Like, how are these deals coming to you? How do you have the confidence in those markets? What's that been like?
Yeah. So that's a great question, especially relative to scaling, because it was part of my process. I don't own any facilities in New York anymore. My first two, the ones in my bio, were in New York. But everything since then has been out of state. And when I talk about these facilities, I'm referring to the ones that I've bought personally, as opposed to ones that I've bought with my students, because that's another realm that we kind of scale through. But what I did on one of the facilities that was local to me is I pretended that it wasn't. Because I knew that if I wanted to continue to grow as fast as I wanted to, I needed to expand my search. There's tons of storage opportunities throughout this country. And here I am just looking at within an hour of home, right? And so I did some development of remote management strategies. I dedicated energy to that. All right, how would we run this if I didn't ever want to go there or couldn't go there? Right. And so we deployed those at a property that was literally 20 minutes from my house as kind of a beta test. Mm. And once we had proof of concept, that gave me the comfort to follow my own advice, and that is go where the deals are. So that property in Florida I alluded to earlier that we bought for 500 and took to 1.51 million, that was only possible because I had spent the previous 12 months or so beta testing this remote management strategy. So I think the lesson there is that part of scaling is having the foresight and the ability to envision the next level, Right. Whatever that might be for you as an investor.
Yeah. And that's tough. That's tough. I mean, you brought up a lot of things. I mean, you've given us so many nuggets here today to think through the things that are just especially growing early on that are challenges everyone faces. And if they don't employ the things like you've talked about, you stay exactly where you are, and growth just doesn't happen. Talk to us about the you have a 3-day event that you put on. And, you know, in my small mind, putting on something like that seems that would be an uncomfortable step for me. Right. That's just thinking out loud here. Talk to us about that event. Talk to us about how you formed it, how you, you know, had the confidence to know that you could bring other people to it and that they were interested in it, and just kind of growing the mentorship side of your business as a whole.
Yeah. So our event, I'm super excited about. It's about a month from now, and it's not a public event. It's only open to our highest level mastermind and one-on-one coaching students. But it didn't start as part of a coaching system. A couple years ago, in much the same way as I just described with the beta test, I held a one-off event. It was just a weekend. That one was actually a two-day event. And I invited 20 people to it. Some of them were my coaching students. Others were just folks who had I had a relationship with, and I knew they had an interest in storage. And then, of course, we did the traditional promotion stuff. And that one event solidified in my brain, hey, this is something I love, and I think it's having the effect that I'm hoping it does. We're seeing our students succeed and form connections, and really, it was a highly valuable weekend for everybody involved, including myself. And I think that's key. There should always be a win-win component to it, right? As cliche as that sounds. And once I decided, hey, this is something I want to do, we incorporated it into our higher level training programs. These are subscription programs that people participate in. And it sounds harder than it is, because the first day, as an example, our last event, day one, all we did was whitewater raft and hang out. We believe very strongly in this idea of an extraordinary life. And so I don't want my events to be 100% storage. We want them to be equal parts storage and awesomeness. Mm-hmm. And so this next event, we're doing ATVs out in the desert around Phoenix. And then there's 2 days of content. But we're very big on, it's not me talking for 16 hours, right? That would be really hard to scale. Trust me. How do I know? Because I've tried that before. And I don't even like listening to me talk for that long. So we tap into our members, and they're the ones who curate and contribute to the conversation. It's a very active learning environment that we try to create. And that's my role, is to kind of build the container so that our community members can connect with one another, forge relationships, and then get also the nuts and bolts education, the next level information that they need.
Mm. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. And I think that goes back to, you know, the highest and best use of your time. It goes back to, you know, working within your own personal zone of genius. I love the idea of build the container and then let the other people kind of fill the contents in, because that both relieves stress off of you, but also at the same time allows others the platform to shine and really, really be part of the team and, you know, share their expertise. So that's super cool. Mike, I love what you're doing. Before we jump into the final four questions here, is there anything else that's kind of top of mind that you would love to share with our listeners?
No, I don't think so. I'm ready for the final four.
Okay, cool, man. Here we go. We'll kick this off. First question is this. If I gave you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. Now, I can't get rid of my hindsight, so I have to say self-storage. But what I would do is get as smart as I could on the asset class of choice for free, and then use that $20,000 as proof of commitment to whomever I need to raise the rest of my money from to get a deal done, whether that's a bank, private investors, et cetera.
Right. That's great. That's great. Question number two is this. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Yeah. So biggest mistake, and this might be a little metaphysical, but the biggest mistake is allowing yourself to be limited by your belief systems. Mm. I believe very strongly that things are true until we entertain the idea that they might not be. And once we do that, it opens up all sorts of possibilities for us.
Right. Right. Man, that's so true. I was playing, I don't know, have you heard of the game pickleball?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So every Monday night we play pickleball, and I was playing pickleball last night, and it happens to be with a group of guys that are very well to do. And I just kind of looked around the room and I'm like, gosh, I mean, these guys are decamillionaires beyond decamillionaires. And I go, I'm not sure I could ever make it that way. And I caught myself having that thought, and I'm like, why not? Why not me? Like, that's so limiting. So yeah, you're absolutely right. That's a great mistake. I'm glad you brought that up. I don't hear that one very often. So that's awesome. Question number three is this. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Yeah, I we try to attack this on a couple fronts. One, we believe just in straight up giving. And so we do a lot of fundraisers within and outside of our community for a school, Escuela Integrada, down in Guatemala. Education and nutrition for kids that would otherwise be selling things in the local market from the age of five. And I've been there before. I know the folks who run it very, very well. And so it's a a very comfortable place for us to try to make a difference. On a bigger level, maybe more personally for me, is I believe very strongly in the idea of stewardship. And so that is everything that I have, my money, my time, my talents, my expertise, knowledge, whatever that might be, is not mine to keep, but it's been trusted to me. And it's my responsibility to do as much good in the world with that as possible. And so ultimately, that's what led us to create the Storage Rebellion Coaching Company, which allows me to kind of pay it forward, if you will.
That's fantastic. I love that. I love that. Question number four, Mike, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, I would invite them to come check out storagerebels.com. We host a free community with 2,700 and growing members. There's also a 7-day, in line with that idea of stewardship, a free 7-day self-storage investing course that people can work through to kind of see, hey, is this storage class something I might want to pursue? And it's not for everybody, but a lot of people that look at it can see the efficiencies. And so we've generated a great bit of interest, and I'm just thrilled that that I'm able to pass it on like I am.
Right. That's awesome. Mike, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.